with that strategic plan, we essentially categorize our research into three different areas. Within the strategic plan, it's cost reduction, revenue generation, or risk mitigation. And so there's components of that within our strategic plan, and we need to do that and cover all those priorities, etc.
The Swinet Podcast Show Canada is only possible with the support and trust of innovative companies like
DietForge.ai, AI-powered feed formulation with non-linear ingredient modeling and real-time collaboration. Finally, modern software for modern nutritionists. When it comes to 25-hydroxy D3 products, purity matters. Hy-D is a pure, effective 25-hydroxy D3 solution to help pigs improve their vitamin D status. Learn more at hy-d.info. Top Pigs Norsvin, the world's most innovative swine genetics company. Herd software aligns your data. Gilt aligns your people. GetGilt.com. Stop hiring for problems automation can solve. Start with Elevate Agents. Revenue grew, so did your hours. The owner's box, buy back 20 a week. Don't hire another VA stuck in 2015. Hire a remote AI specialist from Latin who runs AI tools, works in your time zone, and helps your team move faster. Schedule your free strategy call at www.wisevas.io. Zentrix OS, the business operating system built for teams who are serious about goals, tasks, and measurable results. One platform to run your entire operation. Zentrix Insights. The right person in the right seat starts with knowing how your team is actually wired. Visit ZentrixInsights.com.
Welcome to Swinet Canada, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Aline Remus, dedicated to bring to you the latest insights and discussions in the pork industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. So today we have Dario De Souza. He is Executive General Manager from Pearson, and he's joining us from Australia. So thank you for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
So could you tell us how you got to work in the pork industry?
Sure. So going back to my university days, which is a long time ago, Aline, I actually started out looking at becoming an environmental scientist. And one of the things that I wanted to do and was particularly look at, the way we treat sewage water and things like that. But there was something about the lab that just didn't gel with me. And I saw an ad for a PhD in meat science at the Victorian Institute of Animal Science and the University of Melbourne. And I said, well, I've got nothing to lose. I'll just apply. And one thing led to another. And I've never left the pork industry since. And I've moved around at different roles. I'm here at Sunpork looking after their technical services business unit, and I've been there for almost 9 years now.
It's always like that. We look at that PhD announcement, you say, well, why not? And then it ends up that we kind of love that, and we love the challenge, and I think we just end up staying. So, Dr. De Souza, could you tell me how does being a vertically integrated business shape the way Sunpork approach research compared to others in the pork industry?
Sure. So in terms of research per se, I mean, it's no different. I mean, we have the same scientific integrity, et cetera, when it comes to experimental design, et cetera. What's different, I think, is because we're a vertically integrated company, we have to do research essentially around the whole supply chain or the value chain. And so we do research from genetics through to the end consumer. And my team, our research team, has to have capabilities and skill sets across that. If we don't have that, we will collaborate with others to ensure we get that. And so in the breadth of this research, you have very applied research, and then you have very basic research. So things like, looking at chromosomal translocations and how that affects reproductive performance, through to consumer panel research relating to different products that we might have for retailers, etc. The other thing I think is agility. Now, I'm not saying others aren't agile. It's just we have to be very agile. So given the retailers and our customers, they will say, well, all right, we want this. And it's the research team that usually comes up with the solutions, et cetera. And because it's probably linked to a commercial contract, we will have a very finite time when to do this. And so, agility is another thing. In terms of our research, we do public research as well as our in-house research. And so public research is usually supported by external funding from the pork industry, Australian Pork Limited, also the federal government. And all our internal research is funded by SunPork. Irrespective of whether it's external or public or internal research, we believe and that we are a science-based company, and so we will usually publish everything, including our internal research at some stage. And our thinking there, Lean, is that by the time it gets published, we've already adopted it, and so we already have a jump on anybody. But it's also those publications serve as our business card, if you like, in terms of this is the research we're doing, et cetera, and this is what the results have and things like that. So
it's actually you're doing research that is very hands-on and applicable, and you can see the results right away because you are actually applying it. That's something. Really. Something that I should have asked you before, do you mind telling us a little bit of SunPork for us here from Canada that we may not know so well? So can you tell us a little bit what is SunPork, how you work?
Yeah, so SunPork is Australia's largest pig producer. We're vertically integrated. We have about 53,000 sows spread across 48 sites in Australia and 6 sites in New Zealand. We represent about 20% of the pork industry in Australia. We have our own processing facilities in Queensland and in South Australia. We've got about 1,500 or 1,500 staff from our genetics through to our processing and secondary processing facilities. So yeah, that's about us. And we're owned by an Australian family. So it's wholly Australian owned.
Well, that's really awesome. Thank you for telling us that. So can you walk us through a recent project that you have conducted? Can you share some of the results, how it went through implementation? Tell us a little bit of a story, how it goes from the thought to, you know, seeing the light of the day in a real farm.
I'll use an internal project as an example. And this project, remember what I said about agility? Well, this one took its time this project was 10 years in the making and cost us about $10 million. And so sow confinement has always been an issue for us, whether it be in gestation, mating, or farrowing and lactation. And so in 2010-11, the Australian pork industry voluntarily banned the use of sow stalls during gestation. And then the focus turned to, if you like, the farrowing systems and the farrowing crate in particular. As wean age started to increase, animal activists and also others in the community had a real issue with us keeping the sow locked up, unable to turn around, etc. So we've done, and I say we, that's the Australian pork industry, has done a lot of research looking at alternatives to farrowing crates. All these systems have usually had their origins in Europe. And in a nutshell, They are massive pens, you know, some of them in excess of 6.5 meters square, and very high mortality, piglet mortality, pre-wean mortality. And so we essentially said none of those systems are for us, and they're definitely not viable for us. And so our CEO set us a brief, and this was in 2015, and he said, all right, in terms of what we do, we should have a system that has the same footprint as a farrowing crate, allows the sow free movement. There is no restraint of the sow anytime during farrowing and lactation. In terms of piglet mortality, it needs to be comparable with a farrowing crate. We need to demonstrate a welfare benefit to the sow and the piglet. And just to make the little things a little bit interesting, it needs to cost the same as a farrowing crate.
And okay, so that's a tall order.
It is. So it was no mean feat, given nobody else had done any of in that sort of brief. And so for us, we went to the drawing board, and so there's the research team, but also the production team, who sometimes have really good ideas. And so they got together, and 2 years later, after that briefing, we had our initial prototypes of an alternative farrowing system that we've called our maternity ring. So it sits essentially as the same footprint as a farrowing crate. It has a ring in the middle that allows the sow to lie down and not crush piglets, etc. We've published a paper using the five domains welfare assessment, and have shown that sows in maternity rings definitely have a welfare benefit compared to farrowing crates. Piglet mortality was higher initially, but as we're learning about the maternity ring, we are now at a stage where our pre-wean mortality is comparable with a farrowing crate. It uses less metal than a farrowing crate. So at this stage, with small production, it's about the same cost as a farrowing crate, but likely to get cheaper as we put more and supply and demand kicks in. And so the other thing is, we also wanted, in terms of farrowing crates, so our stock people, you know, their safety, because we do have aggressive sows every now and then, and we need to be able to ensure that work health and safety is not compromised. And so we've done risk assessments, and we've also published a stock person time and motion study looking at, and essentially demonstrating that you can process piglets and the sow about the same time as you would in the farrowing crate. So it meets all of these parts of the brief that were set in 2015. And in 2024, we essentially said this was the system that we will take forward. Within Sunpork, we will adopt a no confinement or no close confinement of the sow, whether it be during gestation, mating, or farrowing and lactation. And so a lot of this data is now published. We've got three more publications that will look at sow longevity. We'll look at other things in terms of first parity sow productivity, and also some other welfare assessments comparing the maternity ring with other farrowing pens. And so long story short, as I said, we're up to prototype 10 of the maternity ring. We don't want to keep this technology. We patented this technology in 2016-17. We don't want to keep that technology just for us. We believe there's benefit for the whole industry. Our industry position is we have to defend farrowing crates at all cost. Having the maternity ring is a viable alternative, and so we've made available access to our farms that we've installed maternity rings in, and also developed training materials. So this is certified training modules that they can adopt and use. And so our thoughts around that is, well, you know, this is too big a deal just to keep for sun pork, and because, you know, the pork industry needs our social license to operate. And so the more people using maternity rings is better for us as an industry, but also good for sun pork. So even though it took 10 years, it was a big project, substantial results, and results that we can demonstrate that the maternity ring does what it was meant to do. Also in terms of our transition, so we've already transitioned. During the research phase, we had a number of farms that had some maternity rings and some farrowing crates. And we had one smaller unit that had only maternity rings. And so in 24, we made the decision we would start that transition. We've also had a retailer that is very interested in this and partnering with us in terms of their production standards. And so we've developed an alternative system, and now we also have a path to market, if you like. So, yeah, that's essentially a project that, yeah, took a long time, but I think demonstrates how we approach our R&D.
For my benefit, can you, like, foreseen what will be the major adjustments that the farms will need to go if they want to install the ring system?
Sure. So given it's the same footprint, and provided you have decent flooring, etc., and in Australia, housing has slatted floors, you can literally lift up a farrowing crate and put a maternity ring in. It is exactly the dimension. So it's 4.3 meters square. It has very low sidewalls, so sows can actually socialize, and they do socialize, and staff can walk across one pen into the other quite easily. So yeah, it's not too difficult, provided your flooring is okay.
That's very interesting. And after, if you want to send us the papers or even any image that you have that you want and to share, send to us, and we'll link here below in the podcast and also in the website, so that people can read that and get more information. I think, as you say, the idea is that everyone can see the system and see what can be done with. I think is if we want to have our social license, I think that is a very well chosen, point. Like we need to actually understand and show what we're doing. And this type of studies are very important. So for the people that are home, if you're enjoying this episode of Swinit Canada presented by Ways and Addicts, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it for friends and family. Send to those colleagues that are interested in animal welfare. I think this one is a especially interesting one. And just set on the notification so that you can see when we have episodes coming. To continue our discussion, what are the key challenges you face in balancing research across some pork supply chain? Because as I see, it's a very large operation. Doesn't seem like an easy task. So,
and that's the challenge. You know, we have to consider our issues, research priorities, research questions right across our value chain. And so, like everybody, we are constrained by our resources. And so we have to prioritize our research. And in doing so, we need to make sure and we pay particular attention to some of the research outcomes that are likely to occur. We don't want any unintended consequences for a segment of the value chain, either up or downstream in terms of how production continues. We will also make sure that we are not increasing the variability pre-farm gate, but also post-farm gate. And so variability is something that is inherent with pigs being a biological system. And our researchers said that, you know, more variability you have at birth or at weaning, that just increases right through to slaughter. Very difficult to actually reduce that variability. But for us, if we can make sure it doesn't increase, that's a good thing for us. So in terms of challenges, we will look at also in terms of the different segments that the research priorities come into with our total list of research priorities. We'll also look at, so say we do wiener research, we will look at the whole of life performance. And so we will look for technologies and solutions that don't necessarily just impact that pig category, but the whole of life performance. And so, yeah, that's some of the challenges. It's, yeah, you have a lot of priorities, limited resource, and how do we, yeah, decide which priority to address.
So, you know, when you talk about variability, it's my wheelhouse and is what I study a lot. So my research line is really understanding why pigs, especially growing pigs that receive the same diet, use this diet so differently. And when you say that, it comes to my mind a graph of John patients that we always use in our presentation, that is the variability as it grows. And I actually plotted, we measured not only the weight of these animals, but also like the body protein and body fat that we estimate with the scans, that we scan the animal over time, the same animal, sometimes the same weight. And what we see in terms of carcass in the end is not the same. You might have the same weight, we don't have the same carcass. It's extremely difficult for the industry to actually deal with that. So I just want to, you know, food for thought, how do you see, you say we cannot manage that. And I will, spoiler, let's say I also think that we cannot really manage that. I think we have to live with that. We probably have to find ways that we might take some advantage of those faster growing pigs and maybe try to curb those or maybe try to speed up a little bit the small ones. But variability, I don't think we'll manage to really control it. How do you see that?
As I said, it's very difficult to reduce that variability. So the next best is to make sure that variability doesn't increase. And so, for example, we will look at potentially anything that causes a growth check, and we will try and minimize those growth checks. The other thing also is we need to understand what's the optimal and what we're finding. And so we use, you know, sentinel sites. So we'll use, I can use the term, NEDAP performance testing systems. And that gives us an idea, smaller groups, the potential that they demonstrate in terms of growth performance, et cetera. And then we compare that with our commercial settings, and then we know exactly what that delta is between, you know, and so, yeah, for us, it's literally a case of just making sure we don't increase that variation. We're not always successful. When it comes to post-farm gate, we use autoform, and so we will get some idea of, you know, back fats, et cetera, and we'll have specific pigs for specific markets, et cetera. But you're right, you may have same carcass weight, but you can have very different amounts of fat or fat content. And so it's something that we live with, but yeah, we don't want to increase it because that just makes it a lot more difficult.
And how is the consumer market in Australia? What is the type of meat they're looking for? So do you go for a specific weight, or do you are looking for produce a type of carcass?
Yeah, so we have different customers, and you know, the retailers, they will have their own carcass specifications and things like that. And so they will tailor that carcass weight to their pack size and things like that. We've got, you know, a carcass size, you know, 76 kilograms, hot standard carcass weight. And then on the other extreme, we've got a retailer that takes 110, 120 kilogram carcass. And so Australia's always had lower carcass weights, but now the retailers, their start point is about 80, 85 kilograms. And so that in itself is something that we have to deal with, you know, a heavier animal, et cetera. How do we do that? And how do we make sure we fit and grade and optimize the grading of those pigs for that particular customer?
We're facing a very similar problem with the increase in the carcass weight. How do we feed these animals? Because we know that last phase, that we go from the 110 to 100 kilogram, 130 kilograms of body weight, live body weight, we might have a high average daily gain, but we know that's not much protein that's been gained there. So how do we manage that feed conversion? How do we manage that? So we also face very, very similar problems. And how you see that research plays a role in the strategic goals of some pork, and how do you actually measure the impact of the research that you're doing?
Sure. So as I said, everything or every bit of research, we link back to our strategic plan. In fact, I think I would struggle to name one project that wasn't linked to our strategic plan, and we're quite rigorous in that. Even when we do our public research, it also has to be within our strategic plan. With that strategic plan, we essentially categorize our research into three different areas. Within the strategic plan, it's cost reduction, revenue generation, or risk mitigation. And so there's components of that within our strategic plan, and we need to do that and cover all those priorities, et cetera. In terms of measuring impact, yes, we can do a cost-benefit analysis of a project, but what is the real impact once adoption has occurred? And so we tend to look at that. Do we do it properly? Probably no, but we do it. And so one of the things in terms of measuring impact, adoption. So just say you have a pre-farm gate technology, say a diet, etc. Just because we're vertically integrated and we have 9 production flows, it doesn't necessarily mean all 9 production flows will adopt it. There's a lot of variation in terms of the housing type, the feed ingredients, the weather. And so adoption needs to happen at different rates, and in some cases, it just may not be suitable. And so we look at that, and then, you know, we really do look at, and but we probably need to do a lot more, is look at impact on cost of our production. And so within a year, we have a cost of production, and you know, in terms of benefit, if there's a reduction in cost of production, we should be able to see it if it's viable or not. Now, sometimes it's not viable, particularly with incremental research. So we say, well, it's incremental research. If it's worth 2 cents per kilogram, it's major. If it's between 2 and 8 cents, anything above 8 cents is transformational. And so we try and measure our impact according to that. But as I said, yeah, easier said than done.
It's time for our famous 3.
WiseNetX turns podcast airtime into brand authority
We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access wisenetics.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
Yes, so you have a very you have a larger view of it. It's really interesting. So we're going here to the end of our podcast. I'm really enjoying this, but unfortunately, I have to let you go. But we always have three questions, more relatable questions to our public. So number one is, what is your favorite pork or swine production textbook?
Not going to have a pork or swine production book, but relates to protein and things like that is, and I've reading some research papers around the impact of GLP-1 agonists, so the likes of Ozempic, etc. And so it's fascinating. So in the US, 6% of the population use GLP-1 agonists, and they have achieved more in terms of obesity rates in 5 years than 48 years of nutritional and dietary recommendations, etc. And so this is a massive impact. Theoretically, when you do take these beta agonist, GLP-1 agonists, you know, protein in particular, you know, meat protein fits well into that diet. But what we're actually finding is these people tend not to eat that much meat. And so there's an impact. So you've got this balance of here in terms of, yes, obesity rates need to come down and things like that, but these technologies might affect what we produce and might decrease demand in time. So I just find that whole scenario very, very interesting. And so, yeah, I'm just reading up on that at the moment.
Funny enough, I was also thinking the same. It's so funny that you brought it up. I was reading, I was just thinking, like, what can we actually do with it? Where can we apply it? Because it does seem like it's a tool that we could not let it pass. And my second question is something that is not related to production. Do you have a book, a movie, or something that you recommend or you like?
The current book I'm reading is called Presilience. So you know Resilience, so this is Presilience, and it's written by Gavin Schneider and Presilience. So resilience essentially is how you and I cope with the disruption, etc. Presilience is all about that planning for disruptions, and by virtue of that planning, we're better able to cope with those disruptions, etc. And so it's a concept that I'm still wrapping my head around, and because on one hand I'm thinking, well, if we're constantly worrying about stuff that hasn't happened but likely to happen, are we just expending a whole lot of energy for nothing? But reading through this book, it's quite apparent that this planning actually helps negate some of those issues that you find when times are disrupted. So yeah, a new concept to me, but one that's quite interesting.
It is very interesting. And the last one is, what you think makes a successful professional in swine production versus those that are not successful?
It's quite simple. It's quite simple. I have not met a single successful pig professional that does not love their job. And I think, you know, the ones that sit above and you know, from others are the ones that absolutely love their job. They get up in the morning, they want to go to work because they've got stuff to do. And I think pig industry has a lot of those professionals, and so we're quite happy with that.
That's true. And we see that you are very passionate for what you do. So we see that. So that concludes another episode of Swine It Canada, presented by Wisenetics. thank you for joining us today. And do not forget to subscribe to our podcast, stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. We really would love to hear what you have to say. If you have questions for Dr. De Souza, you can also write some. We're not promising that he'll respond, but we'll do our best. Maybe we invite him back to the podcast to answer those questions to us. And thank you, Dr. De Souza, for joining us. And thank you at home. This is Alina Ramos signing off.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.